Zach, security and privacy, is it important?
Yeah.
Why?
You don't want someone to steal your identity and take everything from you?
Well, what can they really do, though? Like, how much money do you have in your account?
Not enough.
Not enough, right? So why is it something to worry about then?
I don't know.
You don't know?
They can just do stuff with it.
So they can do stuff with it?
Yeah.
Okay. Josh.
I was hanging out with my mom, and, like, she got something.
Wait.
She got something on
you,
her, like...
Wait, you were hanging out with your mom?
Yeah, we're going to get groceries. Right?
Okay.
So, right when we were trying to pay for it, her card got declined or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently she called Chase and they're like, why were you like buying couches and like stuff like that? And then she was like, I haven't been. So I guess that's important. You know,
gotcha. So someone was using her card to purchase furniture.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, she got all that crap back. But like, you know what I mean? It's just really awkward when her card gets declined.
Yeah, that's always pretty bad. You just tell them, swipe it again. You gotta look at the card and like, no, try it this way. And you give it to them, and they try it again. Like, is your machine working? And then you make it look like it's on them and not you. All right, just use this card. So that's how you gotta do it. So security, privacy, it is something that's important. Although we may not be victims of identity theft and identity fraud, it happens so much that anybody can name somebody that you know who's probably had their identity stolen and probably had their credit card used and, you know, still had their card with them. Like, never lost it, but their card was being used to purchase things online. And it just happens so often just because our data now, the way that we secure data, is important. It matters because people can just grab information. We post so much information, we put out so much information that it just makes it easy for someone to obtain that information and get it from us. So that's kind of some of the things we're going to be looking at and dealing with throughout this chapter. So it starts out talking, why be concerned, computer crime. Right? Now, computer crime is basically any illegal act involving a computer. All right. So any illegal act involving a computer kind of falls under the category of computer crime. And another word for computer crime is cybercrime. They both mean the same thing, referring to any crime involving a computer. All right. And now, in a sense, like because a computer, our mobile devices are kind of defined as computers, that also falls under that crime also. Be considered like a cybercrime or computer crime if you do illegal things like on your cell phone devices that you shouldn't be doing. All right. And when it talks about a multi-billion dollar business, there are a lot of people, like their daily job is to wake up and steal information. They get paid by how much information they steal based off of, you know, what information they can attain and get. That's their daily job. That's what they do every day. Wake up, roll over, go on their computer, and steal data, steal information. And they get paid for it.
What's that job title?
Huh?
What's the job title for that?
I gotta look on the black internet, on the deep web.
Dark web.
And you'll find some applications there. You just fill them. But no, I mean, there's no job description. It's basically just people who have the skills and don't know how to apply it the right way. So they do illegal things. So information privacy refers to the rights of individuals and companies to control how information about them is collected and used. I know most of you don't read like the privacy agreement to see like how your information is going to be used, how it's going to be kept. But in that agreement, they tell you how your data, how your information is going to be used. But the kind of the thing that sucks with that is they can change it at any time, in a sense, and just send you an email saying, oh, we changed our privacy agreement. And, you know, they can tell you to go look at it, but how many of us are actually going to go back and look and see what's changed with the agreement? That's already too long for us to look through, right? The information privacy, like I said, it talks about how our information is going to be collected, how it's going to be used. And all computers users should be aware of security concerns and the precautions that can be taken. And so this email is, did I get this one? Yeah, I got this one. Basically, Norton was offering to protect my data from my internet service provider. So your internet service providers also kind of collect data on you and your browsing habits and what you're doing, what you're searching for. And they sell your information to different marketing companies to target you, right? If you search for something, your internet service provider is going to look and see that. And then they're going to sell what you search for to a company who's trying to get you to buy things that you search for, right? So if you're searching for like cars, they're going to sell that information to like a car marketing company. And then they're going to start shooting ads at you, dealing with kind of cars that you were looking for. All right. And so Norton setting up a VPN through them, they were basically like explaining how they could protect my data, protect what I'm doing, what I'm browsing for, and so that I wouldn't be targeted with certain ads. Right. Did you guys know that, you know, your ISPs are collecting that type of data on you? Yeah. Josh?
One time I searched up like Dairy Queen once, and I saw the ads for
Yeah. Yeah. And it happens a lot.
Have you ever heard the case of where like you're talking with someone about a certain subject and then all of a sudden you start getting ads from it?
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Happens also, right? If you're, you know, talking about something, like your phone can hear those type of conversations and hear those things, and it'll start to target ads at you with things that you're talking about and looking for. You'll see them on social media sites, you'll see them just browsing the web, but they will start to show up. They'll start just through conversation.
I have a little story. So on Google, you can download all of your data Google has collected on you. Mm-hmm. And I think I have like 7 gigs of, I don't know, it's like 100 gigs of data Google has collected on me. And the majority of it is whenever I use Google Assistant and saying like, hey Google, and I give it a command, I let my phone off again. And so this phone will, it's constantly listening. Mm-hmm. And the weirdest part is that when you listen to the audio files of it saying, when I say hey Google, it records maybe a second before you say hey Google.
Yeah.
Saved it, and I found that like extremely creepy.
Yeah.
Also, I was kind of expecting that.
Yeah, it's constantly recording and listening, like iPhones too, because it's listening for hey Siri, hey this, whatever you call your phone, like the Alexa, all those smart hub devices, they're constantly recording because they're listening for you to say the command so that they can actually respond to that. So yes, our phones, our devices are constantly listening to us. Some are constantly tracking us if our locations are on and things like that. So for some people, it's not much of a concern. For others, it's like a big concern for them to be tracked and to be heard and listened to like everywhere at all times. How many of you guys cut your phone off? How many of you guys like cut your phone off? Like if you go to sleep, cut it off, shut it down, power off?
Yeah, my alarm clock.
Yeah.
Okay. So you guys.
Airplane mode?
Airplane mode?
Does that work? Does that happen?
I guess it keeps any outside communication, unless it's connected to the Wi-Fi in airplane mode. Then it's still. You can though. But none of you guys power off your phone.
It won't wake up.
Huh?
I won't wake up.
Yeah. Yeah. If I turn my phone on, you won't see me in this class.
Yeah. So you guys don't have other alarms in your house?
No. I don't know.
So you guys don't have a normal clock?
No.
Nope.
It's my computer. Yeah. Phone. Yeah. Hmm? Everybody just turned the
phone. Wow. Okay. Okay. Let's keep going. All right, so it talks about hardware loss and hardware damage. Really simple, self-explanatory definitions.
hardware loss occurs in a personal computer, USB flash drive, smartphone is lost, damaged, can be stolen. That kind of falls under that hardware being lost. And we know what hardware is, right? Physical components that we can actually touch, see, that's hardware. And this is both a security and privacy concern, right? If you lose your phone, right? And let's say you didn't have a passcode on it. What would somebody be able to do with the information that's on your phone? Nothing? You don't have anything?
Besides my social media, but it's not like I post my whole life on it, so I know what to post and what not to post.
Okay.
But if that's the case, I wouldn't have like my Apple Pay on. Like, that'd just be stupid.
Okay. Okay. Josh.
I have the Chase app to check like how much money is in my account. Would they be able to access that too?
Do you have a passcode on your?
Well, yeah. But,
okay.
You know, it'd still be like, are you talking about like hackers or something?
Just a random person. Just a random person finds your phone. What would they be able to do with that? What would they be able to know about you just by the information that's in your phone?
It's like who my family and friends are and stuff like that.
So they know who your family and friends are. Your email, do you have to log into your email?
No, that's what I'm saying.
So they would have access to all your emails. So they'll be able to change your passwords, right? Because they can go to forgot password. And then it comes to them. So verification text, if you had that set up, it's still coming to them. Verify.
What about like fingerprint passwords? How does that work?
So that's a little more secure, right? Because if you have it set up through your fingerprint, then they would have to actually, you know, try to find some way to duplicate that. So that would be a little more safer in the sense of like having your accounts and programs kind of protected, having that biometric feature there. So definitely a little more effective.
There's a way to like, get around that
picture. There's a way. I mean, everything can, like nothing's 100%, you know, safe. But it's more secure and more safer than just a passcode. Yeah.
So do you think that Apple using the face ID recognition now is like more secure?
It depends. Anything kind of by itself, it's good, but it's not as secure as adding multiple layers of security. All right. So if you have the face recognition that maybe goes along with the fingerprint or goes along with the passcode, goes along with something else, then it makes it a lot more secure. But anything by itself, it's cool, but it can definitely be bypassed or broken.
Yeah, like my sister can open my phone with her face.
Yeah.
We tried it, and like her face opens my phone too, so it's like, but like my face is open her phone, so I don't get it. But
you guys look alike.
I mean, people say they look alike, but like I don't think we look alike. But like, I mean, I guess she's like 3 years older than me too, but still.
Okay. Yeah, that's weird. Like, I have five brothers, and people say we look, like, pretty much like twins. Like, we get asked all the time, like, me and my brother, if we're out somewhere, like, you guys twins? Like, nah. Like, me and my brother, we're 7 years apart, but we get asked if we're twins. He's younger than me, but we get asked if we're twins.
Yeah, we get stopped on the street. Like, someone rolled their window down, and we're walking across the street. Hey, I guess twins?
Right. Yeah, yeah. It's like they've never seen twins before.
Because like her face like was able to pay for stuff with my car, and I was like, all right.
Yeah. Yeah. So the facial recognition, like I say, it's good against, you know, outside people. But like I say, if it goes along with something else, it's a lot stronger. It's a lot better in that sense. But just kind of going back to our cell phones, our devices, if someone was able to find our phone or grab our phone and there was no passcode on it, they would have a lot of information about us. They would know a lot, right? They would know every bank that we're with. They would know every account that we have because everything that we do now comes through our email, right? They would know our family, our friends, because we have so many pictures. of our family and friends in our phone, right? They will know all of our contacts. And even just looking at text messages, right? People can know a lot about you just by your conversations that you're having. A lot of information. Some people store passwords in their phone. Some people store like account numbers, right? So it's, we just put so much information on here that it makes this a really, it makes it a target, because people want this, because if they get this and they can get inside, they have a lot of information, a lot of data to be used. Hardware theft refers to basically somebody stealing hardware, and there's various reasons why they would steal it. They can steal it for the information that's on here, that's on our devices, or they can steal it for just the value of the device itself, right? So some people steal phones basically to be able to sell this phone for a couple $100s. Some people steal it for the information that could be a lot more valuable that's inside the phone, right? If you're able to steal a phone that belongs to like a CEO or somebody like really high up in a company, that's a valuable information that you would have access to if you're able to get into it. So some people would steal it for that sense, or some people just steal phones just to be able to sell the phone and make, like say, a couple $100s. And then damage can occur from power fluctuations, heat, dust, static, electricity, water, abuse. How many of you guys use, did we talk about a surge protector? Okay, so surge protector. You should have a lot of your major appliances, major electronics, plug into a surge protector. So something like this. So something like, you know, these here, they basically protect your devices against surges of electricity, right? Electricity is not just at this constant rate. There are things, there's power that fluctuates, and there are surges that can go through. And if it goes like directly into your electronics, usually it's gonna like blow it, and it's not gonna work. It's gonna like, you're gonna smell like a burning smell, and it basically just means that you burn. Fried the system of whatever electronic it is that was plugged into it. And like I say, that can happen with like TVs, computers, microwaves, refrigerators, like big electronics that take and use a lot of electricity. Those power fluctuations can definitely cause some damage. Some can even start fires, things like that in the home. So having the surge protector definitely helps protect your devices, helps protect your electronics. Should also understand that these surge protectors, they're not necessarily like lifetime, right? So if they take on too many surges, after a while, like they won't have the same effect. They won't work like they normally would. And if there's another surge that occurs after basically it's been used up, it's gonna act as if it's not a surge protector, and it's gonna go to your device and it's gonna cause some damage there. So you should probably make sure that you have updated ones, make sure that they're newer. You don't have to replace it like every, you know, couple months or anything like that, but maybe every 2-3 years, like, you know, you make sure that they're still working, maybe buy some new ones, just to help protect your electronics, right? So that's what a surge protector is. Helps protect against electricity, power fluctuations that would occur. And then I think we kind of talked about dust, about cleaning out our systems to help protect the dust buildup. That's another problem. Static electricity can be a problem. Water and just abuse. All right, so it talks about system failure, which is the complete malfunction of a computer system, basically where your system will no longer work. And that can occur due to several different reasons. It can be hardware problems, software, computer sabotage. You guys know what sabotage is? Tim, what is it?
Purposely trying to change something or break it in a way that, you know, other people, when they try to activate it, it just gets arbitrage or they can use it in whatever you set it to be.
Definitely. So any type of kind of malicious intent, like to cause harm, right? So if somebody like cuts the line of your brakes of your car, right? They're intentionally trying to cause harm on you by not allowing you to stop, right? So that's like a sabotage where they're doing something kind of behind your back that you don't know to cause harm to this individual, right? So that can be one reason why your system could fail. It could be natural disaster. So they can be a hurricane, earthquake, things like that that you have no control over. It can be a fire. But these natural disasters can occur, which can basically cause your system to not work. So some ways we protect against hardware loss, hardware damage, system failure, doors, and computer equipment locks, right? So we protect things by putting them behind a door that has a lock on it, right? Pretty simple, right? We protect our home, the things that are in our home, by putting it inside the house behind a locked door, right? So same way with our devices, we want to make sure that we protect those. Talks about cable locks. If you go to the store and you're like shopping for a new phone, are you able to just kind of pick up the phone and walk around the store with it and try it out? What is it normally attached to? It's normally attached to like some type of cable wire, right, that only lets you pull it so far and use the phone as it is, right? Can you imagine if they just had phones just out where you can just grab, walk around with? You know how much money they would lose from people just slipping the phone in their pocket or replacing, putting their phone there, taking the new phone? They would lose a lot of money, right? So they're trying to protect against that hardware loss, that theft. So we use cable locks, right? Have you guys ever noticed the computers in the lab, how they're kind of locked and have like, so that you can't just pick up the whole thing and walk away with? Yeah, right. Because they don't trust you guys. That's not me. That's them. This is cool. But they want to make sure that the equipment doesn't get stolen. People don't just kind of walk away with things. And laptop alarm software can basically kind of protect your laptops. You can put a device on it that basically tells you if it goes out within a certain range. So you can set it so that your laptop should be within 15 feet or 20 feet of this item. And then if it goes out of that range, then like an alarm goes off, kind of letting you know your laptop is walking away on its own. So those are definitely some things we can do. These are just kind of showing some examples of the notebook lock, cable locks, that we can have on our devices. And it talks about encryption, which we kind of talked about, makes the data unreadable. It scrambles all the data so that you're not able to understand it. And there are some full disencryption, like hard drives, that we can actually purchase and have. And basically what it does is if somebody like steals our hard drive out of our computers or out of our devices, they basically wouldn't be able to access any of the data that's on there because they need the encryption key to basically decrypt the data to understand it. So if somebody just steals it without decrypting it, then they don't have any information. So to kind of sign in and use your computer, you have to decrypt the hard drive in order to access the data that's there. So those are some good options for security purposes, like for businesses, companies. You think about, you know, people just kind of taking data out, taking a hard drive out to steal that data. If it has the full disencryption on there, they would probably know the key also. So, but if someone outside the company were to kind of steal it, then they wouldn't have that access key to actually know the data that's on there. And so that's just kind of showing also like a USB drive, where you would have to input the key, the correct code, in order to actually see the data that's there, right? So someone, if you lose your flash drive, someone just can't plug it in and see all the information that's there. They have to know the key to decrypt the data to access it. And password, biometric feature, PIN kind of help protect against that. So it talks about device tracking. How many of you guys use Find My iPhone? All right. Does it work for you guys? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's the downside to it, though? So, not that you need internet, but it has to be on. Your phone has to be on. All right. So, if somebody cuts your phone off, then it's not going to show up on my iPhone.
You also need internet,
don't
you? You also need internet, don't you?
Well, so you need internet to access it. Yes.
Yeah, but the phone itself, the lost phone, needs internet for you to connect to it, find out where it is, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, not necessarily the internet, but it needs service. Right. Yeah, so if it has service, then yeah, you're able to track it and find it. But that's kind of like to say just the one downside to that. It just kind of talks about like you can, like now we can remotely lock our phone. So through Find My iPhone, you can lock it. You can also wipe it so that they wouldn't be able to access any of the data that's there, which is kind of another cool feature. We can also, you know, put messages asking them to return it. We can ask. But usually people won't return unless there's a reward attached to it, right? So if you really want your hardware back, you offer a reward. Whether you're going to give it to them or not, that's up to you. But you can offer, say, I'll pay you this much if you return the phone. And you just have the police with you, like, yeah, he stole it. Yeah, and then like some have kill switches that cause the device to self-destruct and not like blow up, but it basically just causes it to not work anymore. Proper hardware care. How many people don't have a case on their phone? Everybody else has a case on their phone? What kind of phone do you have, Josh? iPhone 6. No case. How much did you pay for your phone, Josh?
I don't know. I got it on Christmas.
Okay. How much do you think your phone is worth?
I don't know. I didn't buy it myself. I got it on Christmas.
Okay. You want to say about $800?
That seems like a lot. Well,
seems like a lot?
Yeah.
Is it like $400? It's like $400?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so let's just say 500, right? What would you do if you lost that phone or damaged it? Just get a new one? Oh, it's already broken.
Yeah, I got it.
Okay. So if you had a chance to go back and put a case on there, would you? Or
probably not.
What's the advantage of not having a case?
I really just don't have a case because one time I was in my car and I tried to stick my aux with my phone and my case wouldn't let me do that, so I took the case off and I lost the case. So I just don't have a case.
Okay. So you know there are some cases that will allow your aux to fit through.
Yeah,
right?
I know, but I just got the wrong case. And that's too much. I don't want to pay for it.
But you'd rather pay for
a new phone. That's if I lost it.
Right, no, we're just brainstorming, Josh. No judgment. We're just brainstorming some ideas. Trying to make sure we understand we can spend, you know, $30 up front to kind of help protect our device, or we can spend $500 later to get a new device. Or fix the screen, pay $100 to do that. So it makes, maybe we wanna, you know, maybe we wanna protect our devices, you know, by just adding a case on there. And like I said, it doesn't take away from the phone itself. The only thing you lose is the feel of using a phone without a case, right? That's basically the only advantage you have. Which I was once like you, Josh. That's why I'm able to tell you from experience. My phone, I didn't have a case on there just because I liked the feel without a case. I didn't want like a big bulky case on there. I just wanted the smooth, thin iPhone, right? And I was cool. I was really cautious protecting my phone. You know, no problems. I was driving and I was getting out the car. And that's what happened like couple years ago. I had it in my lap that I was driving, and I got out not noticing it was on my lap and fell, cracked. I was like, okay, I learned from that lesson. So then the next time, I had it in my sweater pocket. And for some reason, I'm just walking, like, home and it just falls. I had the Gorilla Glass on the front so it wouldn't shatter. But no case. I just had the glass on the front. But the way my phone fell was like this. And it cracked right under my glass that I had on the front. And so, all right, I've learned. So from then on, I just have now a big case on there just to prevent that from happening. So it was cheaper to buy a case than fix the screen or buy a new phone. So I'm not telling you. We're just brainstorming some ideas, Josh. That's all we're doing here. All right.
It feels like whenever just a phone by itself is just really slippery.
Yeah.
Even
okay.
Without a case, when you first get it, it just slips out of your hands. So
okay.
I think they want you to break it.
Well, see, I had a skin on the back that gave me some grip.
I'm just kind of surprised when they just give you the province.
Yeah.
There's no grip.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you buy it.
No, I definitely get that. But I guess maybe it'd slip in your pockets or whatever you carry it in, maybe. I don't know. But no, I definitely understand. But yeah, so it talks about protective cases to protect our devices. Josh, thinking about it. You got an alarm on your car?
Alarm on my car?
Yeah.
I'm not even sure. My car is on
blast. We have to wait 20 minutes for the car to even get running. So
my car has 4 gears in it, and I've been in first gear for 4 weeks.
You can't get out of first gear in your car?
I don't know, 1K gears.
It's a stick shift? Or it's automatic?
Yeah.
But it's not automatically changing. Josh, I know a guy. I'll give you his contact information. Maybe he can take a look at your car.
I mean, I'm probably just gonna scrap it, if I'm honest.
Well, I think it might be more cost beneficial if you can maybe fix it than buy a new car.
Buy a new car. No, I think we get my mom's car.
You gonna get your mom's car?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like it's not even.
Gotcha. So you
got a ticket too yesterday.
Of course.
Nice. All right. We'll talk, Josh. Okay. All right. So surge suppressors are like the surge protectors we're using to protect it against electrical fluctuations. UPS system. All right. So it stands for uninterruptible power supply, and those are basically almost like a backup battery. And they basically kick in once power goes out. So you have your computer connected to the UPS. And if like the power shuts down in the building and it's connected to the UPS will keep it powered. It'll last for a certain amount of hours based off of, you know, which one you actually purchase or have. But the whole reason it's designed is meant for like businesses and companies that are running servers and are handling transactions. So that if power goes out in the building, they don't lose all the data. They don't lose everything that it was actually doing at that current time. So the UPS basically gives you time to properly shut your system down. So it gives you time to properly close everything out, go through the shutdown process so that you don't lose any data. It's not meant to really like run or use a computer after, you know, you cut power off, because that really doesn't make sense if you can just keep the power on. But like I say, it's meant like in case the power goes out in the building, something happens. You don't lose all the data. You don't lose all the information that your computer was currently working on or doing at that current time. All right. So that's what the UPS looks like. Do I have a picture? No, I don't. So some of them kind of have both built inside, but it looks like this. Like I said, it's a device plugged into your computer, and like this one has 10 outlets. Does it say how long? One USB port.
So this one, backup time, 24 minutes. Oh. So you see, they have different times that they're actually offering and telling you how long they would keep your computer, your system going. But that's kind of, in a sense, what they look like. So this one is 10 minutes. All right, so this is just kind of showing waterproof case for the phone and the rugged tablet. Like for military, like they can't just be walking around with tablets with no cases on them because they're, you know, doing a lot of things. They're moving, running, jumping. They don't want to, you know, pull out a shattered tablet screen. Especially if they're using it for like GPS and things like that, then that would be bad. Then talks about kill switches. Did we talk about Baycar in here? The show? That's a show where they basically have these cars set up for, and they're set up for people to steal, but the police, they have total control over the car. So they make it real obvious too. I don't know why people do it, but they'll leave a car like on the street or in a parking lot, and they'll leave the keys inside with the windows down or put the keys on top of the hood. It looks real, real obvious. It is definitely a trap. And so people will kind of walk by, they'll see it, and they'll start to look around and see, you know, if anybody is near the car, if anybody's going to claim it. And then they'll hop inside, and then they'll start to drive off. And they have cameras inside the car, they're watching, and people will kind of drive. They let them drive for a little while, and they're like, all right, kill the power. And they kill the power to the car, and all the doors are locked, the windows won't roll down. So they're just stuck in the car until the police shows up. And they take them to jail for car theft. But that's, like I say, just having that kill switch, that total control over the car, to cut all the power to it, is in a sense kind of what they're talking about here. So one of the other things talks about backing up data, which I believe we talked about that and how important that is for businesses, for companies to back up their data. And this disaster recovery plan, it's also called a business continuity plan. And what that does is basically every company has this plan in place that they're going to follow in case of an emergency. And that plan basically gets them back into business, back into running and functioning as a current business. All right. So if a disaster happens, the building catches on fire, every company should have a plan in place of how they're going to get back up and running as soon as possible. All right. It's the detailed plan that says they're going to do this, do that, to how to get back up and functioning as a business. All right. So for you business majors, you'll probably see that term or hear that term a lot, business continuity, disaster recovery plan. Because if you're business minded and you want to continue to function as a business, like things are going to happen. But you should have a plan in place to kind of get back to where you need to get to. And when it talks about hot sites and cold sites, it's basically different companies store information in different locations in different places. Right? So like if El Camino, if all the information from El Camino, the students, the classes, the grades, if they're stored in El Camino in one building and something happens to that building, like then they would lose all the records from any El Camino student that's ever been here. How tragic would that be?
You better give me my degree.
Right, so you would have to start over. Yep.
They better give me the degree.
They don't have any records of that, so you would have to start over. So it can be bad having all your location, having all your data in one place, in one location. So that would be like a hot site. But a cold site would be like where El Camino is storing their information in a whole other data center in another state, another place. So that if anything physically happens here, like we can get back up and going and still have all the data because it's kept in a whole other location where there's nothing happening there, right? So that would be like a cold site where you're keeping your information, your data, like in another place, kind of further away from the actual site itself. All right. We still got time.
All right, so it talks about unauthorized access versus unauthorized use. So really, really simple, really easy to understand. Unauthorized access is where you actually access something you're not supposed to, right? So like my phone is sitting right here. If Sergio comes up and accesses my phone, that's unauthorized access. He's not supposed to. If he does that, I'll probably... I'm not going to say it. But like that, he's accessing something that he's not supposed to, right? So that's unauthorized access. Unauthorized use. I give Sergio my phone, and I say, hey, look at this meme. And he looks at it, and then I see his finger do this and do this. That's unauthorized use. I gave him permission to look at something, to use it in that way. But once he starts going through my phone and going through my pictures and videos, then that's unauthorized use, right? He's not supposed to use it in that way, all right? So unauthorized access, like I say, you using a computer resource that you don't have permission to use, all right? Unauthorized use, you're allowed to use this computer, this device, this resource, but the way that you're using it to steal money, steal information, that's unauthorized use, all right? It makes sense, the difference between those two? Okay. It talks about kind of the code of conduct, which kind of specifies how you can use certain items, certain devices. Have you guys ever looked at like your student code of conduct for El Camino to know like what you can and what you can't do? Nope. Okay. It's kind of there. If you go to the El Camino website, it tells you and specifies like specifically what, you know, you can do as a student, what you can't do. It's all there. So that's, like I say, the code of conduct, right? You guys know the code of conduct at your job, right? You know what you can and what you can't do, what you'll get fired for, what you... A little bit? Oh.
I'm still there.
Still there? Okay. Is it based off of, like, other people, though? Just kind of watching, seeing what other people do? So, like, your coworkers just kind of like, oh, we can do that?
Yeah,
oh.
If I see them do it, I'm like, okay, that's fine.
Then you're okay, that's fine.
If my manager doesn't, I'm
okay. Okay, we'll go Tim and then we'll go here.
Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, you just got to know what you can and can't do. Or get away with, sorry.
What you can and okay. What you can get away with.
Yeah, that sounds more accurate.
That's the way to go? That's your philosophy, Tim?
When I look around at my coworkers or anybody else, that's usually how it goes, so.
It just takes me back. Cause growing up, like my mom and my dad would always like say, well, if they jump off a bridge, are you gonna jump too?
Mm-hmm.
I know, right?
Huh? I said they're fake, so no.
No, okay. No, I'm just joking. It just came to my mind though,
oh,
when
yeah,
you
so
said
that's the
just
version.
Got you. Okay.
Pretty much the code of conduct is they give that to you when you get hired.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it's in your hiring paperwork. It's all the paperwork you sign right in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty much taking away liability from them.
Definitely.
And then you've already signed it, so if it happens, it happens. It doesn't matter.
Definitely.
If someone else is doing it, if you're the one who gets caught,
right, yeah. So it's basically giving company businesses basically all the reasons of why they can fire you, or why they can let you go. These are our rules. Whether you actually look at them or whether you actually read them, that's on you. But if we catch you doing one of these, then that gives us the right to, like say, let you go or to fire you without any issues, without any problems. Like, yeah, you can start to say, well, I saw them doing it, but at the same time, they're talking to you and asking you why you failed to follow this rule. So saying someone else did it is not necessarily going to save your job. You're probably just going to get somebody else fired also. And then once they find out, yeah. So the code of conduct, like I say, specifies kind of those uses, those rules. I'm not going to do this. Like, I used to do this to where, like, I would ask you what's the first word that comes to mind when you hear the word hacker. And then
students just started like doing stupid stuff. You guys can't really see that. Okay, cool. Yeah, they just started writing like weird stuff, and it's just, yeah. So hacking involves using a computer to break into another computer resource. That's the technical definition of what hacking is. Using a computer to break into another computer resource. So really simple. One thing it talks about is just kind of like controlling power grids, banks, defense systems. Like everything, kind of a lot of things that we do now, a lot of things that we use now are all controlled by computers, which is why hacking is a bigger thing now than what it used to be. Right, it used to be just hacking to get information from, you know, people, but now like you can hack to get control of a city because everything is controlled by a computer, right? Our lights, our electricity, gas, it's all controlled by computers. So that if someone's able to get that type of information, get that type of access, they can do a lot of damage. One of the links up there, when it talks about InfoPlease, World Event, Cyber Timeline, one of the first cyber crimes was where the U.S. hacked into So one of the first cyber crimes was in 1982 in June. So the Soviet Union was planning to steal some software from this Canadian company, and it basically found out the U.S. found out about it, and so the CIA basically altered software to cause a pipeline to explode, so that they couldn't get that information. That was one of the first kind of cyber attacks. Like I said, their pipeline was controlled through a computer. And so CIA found out about it and was able to go in, change the software, alter it, and cause it to explode so that the Soviet Union couldn't steal that information from that Canadian country. It's kind of crazy, right? Yeah. So... like I say, and this was back in, you know, 1982. So you can just, like say, imagine how much more things are controlled through a computer now than even back then. Like I say, everything is pretty much controlled by a computer. So having that type of access can definitely be bad. Hacking often done wireless networks. Hacking wirelessly is a lot easier than actually... So hacking a bank is actually easier than kind of going into the bank, staging this robbery, right? Because you don't have to leave. You don't have to have any guns or anything like that. You basically just try to hack into that system. You basically try to log in or steal somebody's login information to be able to have access to that bank and the information and the money that's there, right? So that's why a lot more people do it that way than actually going into the bank. And then let me talk about this real quick and then we'll be done. Okay. So this is the top 10 most notorious cyber attacks in history. So one of the ones that were kind of interesting was this one. So back in 1995, this guy named Kevin Posing was trying to win this car through the radio station, and he had to be like the certain caller. And so he basically figured out how to hack and block everyone else from calling so that he could win the car, so he could be that caller who wins. And so he ended up winning. He won the Porsche by being the 102nd caller. But like I say, he took control of the phone network and blocked incoming calls to the radio station number.
Did he keep the car?
Well, he ended up winning the car, and then they caught him, and he went and did 5 years in prison.
Right, but once he came out of prison, he became the senior editor for IT security publication at Wired News. Right, so he had the skills of a very smart person, right, to be able to block the phone lines so that he can be and win that car. But the way that he did it was illegally and was bad. So he went to prison, suffered his consequences. But because he's such a smart guy, like, people want that type of person working and securing their network, securing their company. So you come out with a nice high-paying job to do the same thing you were doing, but legally now. Tristan, you were going to say something? This is a Porsche.
The first sentence.
First sentence, a Ferrari.
And then it
says
one Porsche.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. I believe that's a Porsche. But yeah, so that was one that was kind of interesting to me. The last one, well, one of the other ones, there was this teen who hacked NASA, U.S. Defense, and he was only 15 at the time. He ended up committing suicide. One of the other ones was Robert Tappan Morse. And this guy, he ended up creating, like, the first worm, like, computer worm. Like, he was a student at Cornell University who was really smart. He had a really smart background. His dad worked with computers, and he kind of fell into it. And he was working on some stuff, and he basically kind of sent this worm to a friend to kind of test it out, not really knowing, like, the full impact of what it would do. But he just sent it to a friend and told a friend to kind of open this and look at it, take a look. Once his friend got it, it basically started to spread, because that's what worms do. Once they get attached to a system, they spread on their own. Like, so they don't need anything else for you to do. Once your computer becomes infected, it starts to spread to other computers, other devices, all on its own. All right. And so he did that. And like I said, he's a student at a university. There were, like, a couple other universities connected onto their same network. And so basically this worm just took off and started to spread throughout the whole school. It's estimated it affected, like, 6,000 computers, which causing damage of, like, $10 to $100 million in repair bills. But like I say, it slowed down the whole school's internet. There were some schools that had to basically couldn't use their internet for, like, a week. It affected schools not only at Cornell, but, like, Berkeley was connected to that same network. Harvard was connected, and all these schools basically had really slow internet because these worms were constantly spreading and sending themselves out to other computers, other devices. really smart guy. He didn't do any jail time. They just gave him, like, probation and some community service, things like that. It's a real slap on the wrist. Because he said, like, say, it wasn't intentional. He didn't intentionally send it out to, like, everybody. He sent it to one person, but because they were on this network, it kind of got spread out to everywhere. This was, like, the first worm, so he really didn't know the effect of it. This was another basically kind of major attack.
He got a good job after that?
Oh, he was already pretty smart. He was in, like, IT graduate school, and but I'm sure he works for some major company now. So that's pretty much it. We'll cut it off right here for today. Any questions dealing with chapter 9? Oh, I'll be there.
Oh.
Yeah. All right, so I'll see second lab over there. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Oh, no problem. Appreciate it.
I finished all my assignments. Is it necessary?
That's why I'm saying just wait.
I really, yes. Could you stay for like 15?
Yeah.
Okay. And you can work on case 2.
I finished all of them.
Case 2?
Oh, case 2.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yep.
I was looking at the roll call, and apparently I was here on the 26th of April, but it shows that I was absent.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, so remind me once we get over to lab.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I took second place in the last Kahoot.
Yes.
The last one. In your writing, it was so long.
Oh, it doesn't matter the order. You guys all get the same points.
Okay.
I got you.